Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. Right now, it's the Joe Show. Joe gets to talk as much as he wants. You know, some of you complain to me, hey, Joe, are you even on the show? Hey, you know, like this one today, you get to hear me a lot. And we've got a great cast of characters joining us today. But first, Coach K will be joining us in just a little bit. He's just a little late getting here. But our guests for today are Jasper baseball play-by-play man and WITZ sports director Walt Ferber. We have got IU assistant AD Mark Deal, who's going to join us to talk about IU football. We've got PurdueScout.com owner and editor Chris Emma is going to join us to talk about Purdue sports. And lastly, we'll have Zach McCrite joining us from ESPN St. Louis and the Zach and Coach show that airs on ESPN St. Louis to talk to us about Cardinal baseball. And, you know, he's kind of a jack of all trades, so I'm sure we'll talk NFL draft and et cetera with him as well. But, you know, before we get started, since I've got total 100% access to the mic, just wanted to bring up a couple points. Maybe if anybody wants to call in today, they can call in to 773-897-6325. Again, that's 773-897-6325, and maybe we can discuss some of these points that I'm going to bring up right now, all involving the three major schools in the state of Indiana. We've got Maurice Creek leaving to go play his senior year elsewhere, sounds like he wants to get closer to home, and I just want to get your opinion on that. And if you're a Notre Dame football fan, you'll know that that Teo is still waiting at the table, waiting to get picked. Even though Notre Dame tight end Tyler Eifert did get picked by my Cincinnati Bengals, so I will have to learn to cheer for a Notre Dame guy. But then lastly, also, something we Purdue people are calling Choochgate. What's Choochgate? Well, Choochgate has to do Sandy Marchuse, center for Purdue. He was he's going to be graduating this summer, and he's going to take his fifth year and play elsewhere. He feels like he needs to get more playing time, et cetera, instead of sitting behind A.J. Hammond to try to further his European career. And the big controversy is that Purdue's not paying for his last two classes in the summer that will help him qualify or to graduate so that he can go on to another college and play next year already. Now, I'd like to hear your opinions on that subject as well, 773-897-6325. But before you can give me your opinion, I guess I'll give you my opinion. You know, if Sandy had said that he wanted to leave this time right now and he was graduating this semester, I could see the point, but I just don't see why Purdue would have to pay for like $7,000 for him to finish his last two classes in the summer when he's already declared that he's leaving. I know that there have been some people that in the newspapers up northern Indiana where Sandy went to school that are kind of complaining about that Purdue owes this to him, but I'm just not so sure. You know, I mean, he's decided to leave the program. He wasn't asked to leave the program. He was asked to stay, actually, because, you know, he was an asset as a backup behind A.J. Hammond. Now, A.J. Hammond, you know, is going to get a majority of the playing time, but, you know, Sandy could have been a great backup in the plan for Purdue. But we will see what happens with that. And then we also have some other things going on in the world of sports. We've got the new Big Ten alignments out for football, which is a good thing for my Boilermakers and maybe not so good for the Indiana Hoosiers. If you haven't heard, the Big Ten West consists of Wisconsin Badgers, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, Northwestern Wildcats, Iowa Hawkeyes, Purdue Boilermakers, Illinois Fighting Illini, and the Minnesota Golden Gophers. You know, what I like about Purdue being in that is not only is it not stacked terribly, but it's also all traditional Big Ten schools other than Nebraska. Now, the Big Ten East is, and what IU is going to have to be dealing with, it involves Ohio State Buckeyes, Michigan State Spartans, Michigan Wolverines, Penn State Nittany Lions, Rutgers Scarlet Knights. I'm not even 100% sure. The Maryland Terrapins and the Indiana Hoosiers. Not too great of a deal for them, but, you know, we'll see what happens. But I'll tell you what, we're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to WITZ sports director and Jasper baseball play-by-play man Walt Ferber about the number one rated Jasper Wildcats. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
I want a hamburger, no cheeseburger. I want a hot dog, I want a milkshake, I want potato
chips. You'll get nothing and like it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by Hall of Fame sportscaster Walt Ferber. Walt, how are you doing this great Friday afternoon?
I'm doing great, Joe, and even better now that I'm talking to you, buddy.
That's good. You know, we brought you here because we wanted to know about the number one rated Jasper Wildcats, and we figured, you know, there's no better person to check with and find out a little bit more about the team than you. You know, 14-1, I think, right? 14-1, ranked
correct,
number one.
Yes. Now, 14-1 is correct. Coming off a big win last night over county rival Northeast New Boys, they're playing very, very well right now.
And you know, a good mix too of veterans and youngsters. And you know, just give our listeners a little overview on the Jasper baseball team and their players.
Yeah, you said it very well. It is a mix of veterans and youth. Good pitching. The pitching is led by seniors Mark Geisler and Nick Gobert. Team ERA, I think, is about 1.3. Geisler and Gobert both undefeated on the year. Spencer Otto has pitched very well for them also. As far as the veteran group, but they've got two young pitchers that look pretty good also. Cal Kruger. Cal got the victory last night against Northeast New Boys. And Shepard, who when he's not pitching has done a great job of playing shortstop. And it's very, very unusual for a Jasper baseball team ever to have any freshmen dress out at varsity, especially this early in the year. But Kruger and Shepard have become integral parts of this ball club. Geisler, Gobert, Otto, Kruger, and Shepard give them a dynamite 1-5 pitching staff. They're hitting the ball well. Team batting average is approaching 400. Mark Geisler leading the way, hitting 455. He's already got 6 homers right now. The team is hitting from top to the bottom of the lineup. They've got power. They steal bases. They're 36 out of 39 stolen bases while allowing only one stolen base to the opposition. So outside of a little gaffe, and I know that Coach Gobert, not necessarily happy with the fielding percentage now, but it's back up around 930. They're literally doing everything top to bottom and are just playing extraordinary baseball right now.
Now, you know, They've got Jeffersonville tonight. Do you have any idea? You give us a little overview on what Jeffersonville offers them this evening.
Well, and the pitcher's name escapes me, but we're going to see the same pitcher we've seen for the last 3 years. He throws middle to upper 80s. We were able to get a win against him last year. He beat us 2 years ago. Jeffersonville's got a nice program. Al Raby was with them a long, long time as their coach. He retired a couple of years back, and I believe he's now coaching Silver Creek. But there's a little juice, a little rivalry there. Jeffersonville really has a good program. They got a lot of athletes there, got a pretty good pitching staff, and like most teams out there, they really like to have a shot to beat Jasper. So it's at Jeffersonville tonight, so we know it's going to be a good ball game. And Joe, after the win over Northeast Du Bois, we're going to be seeing a guy that throws gas tonight. He had him hitting off the pitching machine last night and had it cranked up about as high as it'll go to get them ready to face this Jeffersonville guy's fastball tonight. So they don't, you know, Coach Gobert doesn't rest on any laurels there. They should be ready to go, and I think it probably should be Mark Giesler's turn of the rotation to pitch tonight.
Okay, you know, we mentioned Coach Gobert. You know, he's been just an extraordinary coach for Jasper. And you know, I have a lot of people that know, you know, hey, you're from Jasper, you played baseball. You know, they don't think they realize Terry's probably younger than I am, so no, he did not coach me. but you know, what is it about Coach Gobert? I know that there have even been other Jasper sports teams that have brought Coach Gobert in to give speeches. What is it about him that makes him that extra notch above, you know, where he can get the excellence out of his players?
Well, I know a little bit about Terry when he's not coaching baseball in fall and winter. He's my analyst for football and basketball. So I'm with Terry quite a lot, even outside of baseball season. But nobody's going to work harder than him. He really never, ever takes anything for granted. He will learn details of other teams. He pushes. Nothing is ever correct. And he can do it in such a way that he's always got a smile on his face and he can crack a joke. And he really has the ability, and all really great coaches I've seen have this, of making his players want to do the work that is necessary to be a champion. And if you're going to be a champion, unless God's given you a lot of ability, it takes a heck of a lot of work. And he gets these young men and has for years and years and years want to do the necessary due diligent work that's necessary to make them win. And I've looked over the years, there's a reason that a lot of teams win and there's a reason a lot of teams lose. And the communications he does and has the players take ownership of the team, all these things, the fact that he's had a solid coaching staff with him, you know, he's got Coach Albrand, he's got Coach Kendall, and my radio partner, Ray Howard, who was the former coach. He has a lot of people surrounding him that are very knowledgeable and work hard, and there's a lot of inputs that make Jasper baseball as good as it is.
Yeah, and being in coaching in the past, I've realized that, you know, your head coach is up there, but you've also got to depend on support staff. And, you know, Coach Gobert's got a great support staff as well, doesn't he?
Oh, well, yeah, you look at it. They have all had ties to the Jasper program before. Phil Kendall pitched for the Wildcats and had a very good minor league career. Had a fastball that was over 90 miles an hour. Jason Albrand was a player in the program. He's one of the smartest coaches I've ever seen. He's been with Terry for a number of years, and he's got Coach Wolf and Coach Dahl that take care of the JV squad. And one of the things that I found has really made a difference, and I've got to work with him the last couple of years, Ray Howard, who coached, is a Hall of Famer himself, coached a number of years, and he takes the time in the off season. He works with the pitchers, and he does a lot of very detailed work in the off season. Coach Kendall does that too. Andy Noble, who's now the athletic director, was a pitching coach before him. He pitched at the University of Evansville and for the Evansville Otters and the DuBois County Dragons. So he's really smart, and what I found out with a lot of CEOs or coaches, he surrounds himself with people that, one, have a passion for the program, and two, flat out know how to coach.
Yeah, it's got a great staff. Now, do you have any inside scoop for us? We're always looking for the inside scoop here. And is there any inclination on what Nick Gobert's going to be doing next fall?
Well, he's going to play baseball somewhere, and there's a couple of possibilities, and I'll let him be the one that gives details out of that. But he will be playing baseball somewhere, and he's had several opportunities in several schools that are looking to have him play, and he's looking into several others. And in his good time, he'll pass that along, and they'll have a press conference and announce where he is going to go. But I can tell you pretty much uncategorically, next year at this time, we'll be playing college baseball.
Okay. And, you know, being a sophomore parent, I am a sophomore parent, and following the football team real close with a football player and knowing that sophomore group, I've only been to a couple games, but one person that does not surprise me that sits out there producing for the Wildcats is sophomore Ben Moore. And what's been your impression of Ben Moore?
Well, he is, he's a great kid. He's a good multi-sport athlete. He said, we saw in the fall that he's a heck of a football player. The thing that I like about him most, he's smart, and the big thing is at the plate, he has really quick hands. He can turn on the ball, you can try to jam him inside, and he's able to take the ball the other way. Very intelligent hitter, attacks each plate appearance the way you're supposed to, and he plays a pretty solid left field. When you have the outfield of Ben in left and Devin Traylor in center and Spencer Otto in right, that's a pretty doggone solid defensive outfield. And, he's made some outstanding plays in left field. And he's good, and I think he's up around .340 as a batting average now. He's good, and he's going to keep getting better.
Yes, he is. He's always been a winner as I've watched him growing up through the ranks of baseball, and he's always just been one of those players that when the game's been on the line, you always knew that he was going to produce, and we saw that in football as well. And he's just one heck of a player. And the thing about Jasper baseball is we've got such a strong tradition, great players, and we've had we've always had a strong bench. And can you tell us a little bit about their bench? And some of the players that
Coach Gobert is a strong believer in secondary positions. And the one thing about blowing a lot of people out, and I think about 9 of their games have been run rule games that you've seen, and even the ones that haven't, you've seen players come in at different positions. Scott Stallwood is caught. But you've also had Nick Gobert, who's a pitcher and a second baseman that can also catch. First base, you've got Mark Giesler. But Liebring behind him has done an excellent job. He's gotten, a start when Giesler's pitched. Liebring's got a home run on the year and hitting about .375. He'd be playing about anywhere else. Second base, you've got a number of possibilities. Nick Gobert has played there some this year. Andy Knust, a senior, has played there well. You look at that shortstop, a number of people have played there. Nick Gobert has played there. Shepard has played there. Cal Kruger has played there this year. Third base, Austin Ollis has done a great job there. But you've brought in people behind him. Cortland Betts has also played third base well. In the outfield, you've had Moore in left, but Seibert has come in and replaced him. And he's also played some center field for Traylor. Right field, Knust has had the ability to go in and play right field when Otto is pitching or at first base. I mean, you've got one thing that Coach Gobert likes and is really a sign of any Wildcat team is interchangeable parts and versatility. And as Coach Howard has said on the broadcast, whenever you have your pitching staff that's also position players, you've got to have secondary positions available. And he's used his entire bench for literally, you know, the entire season. And when, you know, when you're at a varsity baseball game and you're coming out, even if you're not starting, you got a pretty good idea that you're going to have the possibility to have a plate appearance when you get in, when you get into the ball game.
You know, May is right around the corner here, and, you know, we'll be winding up the season in May. And what is the outlook for the sectional and regional as far as the Wildcats are concerned? Is top competition they'll be playing in, at those levels?
We got to take them, you know, obviously you got to take them one game at a time, but you look at the sectional. Heritage Hills knocked the Cats off a couple of years ago. They would be, you know, obviously would be a possibility. But Jasper's pretty much taken care of all of the sectional, you know, sectional people there. I would probably say Heritage Hills and Washington in the sectional. You never know when somebody's going to come out of the eastern part of the state, though. We found out last year when we got into the regional, you face a hot team that you don't expect. And last year it was Silver Creek, and Jamie Valvano pitched well and knocked, you know, had his first home run ever to beat us. You know, we're looking pretty solid right now, but you never know this is the kind of deal where if a pitcher gets hot and you make a couple of errors, there could be any number of ways you can get beat. So it should be a very, very interesting tournament, but, you know, I'd say the Cats look pretty good.
Okay, well, Walt, well, thanks for joining us today. And give us a little overview. What is on tap for the WIT sports schedule here in the next week or so?
Man, we carry a lot of baseball. Whenever the Wildcats, Jasper Wildcats, are on, they're on home and away. We also carry a number of, got a chance to carry Coach Pryor's Jasper softball team. So whenever the baseball team's not playing and the softball is, we'll have the softball obviously on the air. All of the NASCAR Sprint Cup and Nationwide Series. And coming into May, we're your station for the Indianapolis 500. We'll be covering that all month long. And Gary Cornwell, our auto sports reporter, and myself will be in Indianapolis looking at the local angles. So busy month of May coming up. And it should be a lot of fun, but a whole lot of Jasper baseball in the month of May.
Now, Walt, before I let you go, I forgot all about, and we're equal opportunity here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Coach Pryor's team and how they're doing this year?
Well, I tell you what, they're playing solid, and he's really coached the team well in his first year. They've been popped by the injury bug. Katie Krimp, multi-year starter, is out at first base. She's had an ankle injury. Hopefully she should be back soon. Center fielder Michaela Flamian's also had a bad sprain, and she is out. Berger, the backup first baseman, has been out with an injury, so they have been hit by injuries pretty hard. Have lost their last couple, but Keegan Catter, a multi-year starter at pitcher, has been pitching extraordinarily well for them. You've got Lindsey Baker, a senior, who's just absolutely tearing the cover off the softball for them. And they also have two freshmen that are playing extraordinarily well. Nicolette Eckert has played left field, and I think last game against Boonville she played at shortstop. And Jasper baseball fans will remember the last name Werner. Well, Kevin's daughter, Paige, is kind of is installed herself at third base. She's one of the best hitters on the team as a freshman, and she truly is a chip off the old block. She's very talented. So this is a Jasper softball team. Coach Pryor's really picked up where Coach Rupert left off, and they could do some damage come tournament time too.
Okay, and when does their tournament start?
About 2 weeks before this. Before baseball, so it's coming up.
Okay, well, thanks, Walt, and you know, we hope to have you back on here, and you know, as the Jasper baseball season goes on, and we'll also, of course, have you on during football and basketball.
And always enjoy it, Joe.
Thanks for joining us, Walt. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
Mr. Kirby, I think I have a way out of this. We call the police, and we have them send over one of their sketch artists. And this ball breaker can't give a description. We can put up wanted posters all over school. Have you seen this, Frank? Report immediately to be with the ball breaker.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan. Still not joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. He'll be on much later in the show. We're going to have coming up real soon, we're going to be having Assistant Athletic Director for Indiana University, Mark Gill, discussing talking IU football with us, and he'll be joining us just shortly. And the NFL draft is going on right now, and looks like defensive ends and offensive tackles are the name of the game this season. We've had three offensive tackles taken in the first four picks, and then at position 3, 5, and 6 also had defensive ends. And the Colts took Bijorn Werner out of Florida State. He is a defensive end as well, so they're looking for help, to come out of their to come off the edge there for them as well. And Bengals, of course, as I stated earlier, the Bengals took Tyler Eifert out of Notre Dame University. Notre Dame University. I'm going to have to become a fan of a Notre Dame guy, which should be quite interesting. But we also have the Bears took Kyle Long. He's an offensive guard, and I know by looking at Facebook today, we've had quite a few complaints about that pick. I don't know too much about the pick, but we're going to I'll tell you what, though. We have got someone's talking. I had a caller call in, and then they hung up before I could get to them. I'm working solo today, so I do want you to know that that's kind of tough to work solo and be also be calling people, and it's kind of tough. But we are going to take another quick break, and when I come back, we will have Mark Deal from the Indiana University football program. You're listening to Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
Hey, I just want to say to all you other drivers out there, if you smell a delicious, crispy smell after the race, it's not your tailpipe. It's a little bit of shake and then bake. Shake and bake. That's our nickname.
Get used to hearing it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773 877 1-800-283-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and we are now joined by Mark Deal. He's the Assistant Athletic Director up at Indiana University, and we're here to talk to him a little bit about Indiana football. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing good today. You know, IU, a lot of excitement and some really good recruits coming in, and I know that Coach Wilson's got the excitement level in Bloomington about football as high as it's been in a long time, and kind of give us your overview on how spring football went for the Indiana Hoosiers this year.
Well, it really started with our winter. I think we had a really good winter. The guys went right back to work after the last football game and into the weight room and worked hard in December up until it was time for final exams, and they went home in December and then came back in January, and we really had a very productive winter, and the guys really made some big gains in their lifting and gaining weight and getting big. Coach likes to say the first word in Big Ten is big. And they were able to do that and get bigger and stronger that way. And then it just kind of progressed into the winter program, just kind of dovetailed right into spring ball. And I thought we had a very positive spring practice. I don't think it. I'm looking back on 15 practices, we had really, and this doesn't often happen, we had really 15 excellent practices, and it really went well. It was just a tremendous spring that way.
Now, with the Big Ten just recently, I don't know if the Big Ten's actually announced this. Are the alignments for the two sides of the conference, are those official yet, or? Is that just something that people are leaking and they're not 100% sure what's going on?
Well, they haven't told us it's official yet, so I'm not quite sure. I know the presidents are supposed to meet this weekend, and they're the ones that sign all our checks, so they're probably going to be the ones that are going to say what's going on. So, but yeah, we just read everything like everybody else does in the paper, so I don't think anything's official for a while yet.
Now, tell us how that's going to work if it is like this. IU and Purdue will still play every year, right?
I can't imagine that not ever happening. And well, supposedly, again, this is all just stuff we've read. We haven't seen anything on paper, concrete, so it's kind of premature to kind of comment on any of that because it's all speculation. But I can't imagine any time ever that Indiana and Purdue would not play every year in football. I just can't imagine that happening. But, stranger things have happened, I suppose, especially since we're in the same conference. It's one thing like Texas and Texas A&M not to play because A&M's in the SEC now and, Texas is still in the Big 12. But, it's one thing when both Indiana and Purdue are in the Big 10 and I can't imagine us not playing every year. I really can't.
Mm-hmm. Now, how will that work as well? I've had people ask me, with the conference split like this, how often, if IU and Purdue were opposite and they were guaranteed to play every year, how often mm-hmm. would IU play like the Iowas and the Nebraskas and some of those, those teams that would be on the opposite side?
They haven't told us. I have no idea. This has all been in the media and speculation by different people in the media, and it hasn't been none of it has been told to us. So we really, it would be hard for me to comment on anything that we don't know that hasn't been told to us because, like I said, it hasn't been officially approved by the presidents of the universities, and I don't believe that's happening until next weekend. So... Or this weekend, we haven't been given any kind of email or instructions from our heads, so we're just kind of we know what you know. Unfortunately, I don't know any more than you do.
Yeah.
Just what I read, because nothing's official and nothing's been told to us. I know for this year. There's nothing no change, well, obviously, whatsoever. We're still doing the same thing we've been doing.
Okay. Now, you know, IU last year, you know, unfortunately, you had Trey Roberson go down, and you know, which gave you an opportunity to play two other quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got all three of those back. So, I mean, quarterbacks definitely got to be a major strong suit for the Hoosiers this year. And
Absolutely. I thought it was a really good give and take, and that's the thing everybody was questioning. Well, how's Trey, you know, how's he doing, or this, you know, those things. He's fine. You know, I would say he's probably about 90% right now, but 90% of Trey is better than 100% of a lot of people. We had a kind of a fun thing the other day. We had a team slam dunk contest, and Trey threw the ball off the backboard and two-hand slammed it home. You know, a guy that's lipping around and is hurt probably can't do that, I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah.
So he's doing pretty well. He's doing real well. And you know, that is a point of strength. You know, Cam Kaufman started the last 10 games after Trey went down and had a heck of a year. Nate Sudfeld played a lot last year and in relief and did some really nice things. And you know, we have three really good quarterbacks. We can win with any of them. So that's a real good thing for us. We feel really good about all three kids, and they're all great kids, and they're good leaders. I feel real good about all of them.
Now, wasn't a problem for them last year. The defense kind of struggled a little bit, and they have brought some really, really strong recruits in for defense. Now, did were any of those recruits able to graduate early and come in this spring, or
they'll all be here in the fall. The only ones, well, we had two junior college kids come in early that graduated from their junior college was Jordan Heiderman and Steven Funderburk, and they were both from Iowa Western, which won the junior college national championship. Jordan's a defensive tackle, and Steven is a linebacker. So both of those guys were able to be here in the spring. They were junior college guys. And then we had one high school kid, T.J. Simmons from Lakeland High School in Lakeland, Florida, graduated early, and T.J. was here for spring ball, and he did very well playing linebacker. So we had two linebackers and a defensive tackle in for spring ball, and they all did very well. All did very well, and all impressed the coaches and worked hard, and we really liked their work ethic really from the first day they were here in January until right up through spring ball, and they're doing well academically. We're excited about them. We're real excited about them.
Now, looking at the schedule for next year, you know, first five weekends all in Bloomington, you know, and you know, it looks like a nice schedule. You do have to follow that up with trips to East Lansing and Ann Arbor before you have two more at home. Tell us about what the coaching staff and what you think about the first of all, let's go over the pre-Big Ten part of your schedule, and then we'll go over the Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, the only thing about our schedule basically is we don't have to get on a plane or a bus as much because we're at home. But it's a very tough schedule. I think it's considerably tougher than what we played a year ago. 10 of the 11 teams that we play were either in a bowl or bowl eligible, and I say that because you know, Penn State and Ohio State would have been in a bowl, but they couldn't be because they were ineligible, you know, because of probation things. So 10 of the 12 teams, were in a bowl. The only two that, or bowl eligible, the only two that didn't have, weren't bowl eligible were Illinois that we play and also Missouri. And Missouri was 5-7, but they were also 5-7 in the SEC. So I think had they been still in the Big 12, they'd have probably been about a 7-5 or 8-4 team. So it's not easy. It is. 8 games doesn't guarantee anything at home. All it guarantees is you don't have to get on a bus to play. So while it's nice to play at home, our schedule is really, really tough. We trade Ball State for Bowling Green, which is about even. Bowling Green was terrific last year and went to a bowl game and won 8 or 9 games. I can't remember what they ended won. I did watch their bowl game, and they're a terrific team. So that's probably – they're probably very similar to Ball State. And Navy's very good and beat us last year. So we've got a tough – we have a tough schedule this year, no question about it. And it's nice to be at home, and it's nice to not get on a bus or a plane, but you know, being at home doesn't guarantee anything. We gotta go out there and do it on the field, and it's going to be very challenging for our guys, and our guys know that. They're not taking anything for granted just because you're playing at home doesn't give you a W.
Well, Mark, we'd like to thank you for joining us, and we'd like to have you on as a regular guest, you know, talking how you football.
Oh, I'd love to do it. Absolutely. Love to do it, Joe.
And you're welcome back at any time, so. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll be talking to you real soon.
Well, thank you, and we appreciate it, and all our fans that are listening out there. It's going to be an exciting year, and we're real excited about it, and our guys are working real hard, and I think we're going to have a team that a lot of people are going to be proud of this year. I really think the players have bought into Coach Wilson's work ethic and the things that he's instilled in these guys, and I just really, really am looking forward to it.
Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you, sir.
Yep, Ted. And when we come back to the Coach K and Joe show, last week we had Cody Zeller on, and we're going to rebroadcast that interview because some people missed it, and some people, I guess, couldn't find a way to make it back to the podcast. So we will be back with the Cody interview. This is the Coach K and Joe show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
Hey, I just want to say to all you other drivers out there, if you smell a delicious, crispy smell after the race, it's not your tailpipe. It's a little bit of shake, and then wait. Shake and bake. That's a big thing. Get used to hearing it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K. Ken Schulteis, and we're very, very excited about our next guest. Our next guest does not need to explain who he is. He's Washington Hatchet great, Indiana Hoosier great, future NBA great, Cody Zeller. Cody, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Hey, Cody, this is Coach K. It's great to have you on the show, and as Joe just said, I think he's a Purdue fan, so for him to be so excited means something. Maybe having you on the show is going to bring him over from the dark side.
We can
only hope. It's great to have you, and you have been an outstanding player, All-American, All-Big Ten, All-Freshman, Big Ten Freshman Player of the Year, you name it, you've done it, and now you are beginning the next quest of your career, and that's a walk into the NBA. And before we talk about that, I'd just like to spend a few minutes talking to you about your time at IU and just to ask you how that time went and what you've learned there. So, Cody, the first thing I would have to ask you is, when you got to the campus and you started the basketball part of things and in the gym and being a part of the campus and seeing the program develop, from going from high school to IU, what was that feeling like to get on campus and already be, and I know you're a humble person, but already be the focus of IU basketball?
It was a little bit different, but, you know, all my teammates and coaches did a nice job of kind of bringing me along. I felt like a freshman at a lot of points, just felt lost. So there was, you know, trying to find classes or on the court, playing in the Big Ten. So I definitely didn't feel, you know, like I was the focal point at all. I felt like a freshman at a lot of points. So, but luckily I had good teammates and coaches to kind of help me along.
We had a great freshman year, and the team had a great season. And being an IU grad myself, I was just so excited to see the growth and the comeback story all in one. It wasn't just a comeback, but it was a growth in the program itself. When you look at your freshman year and going through this year as a sophomore and as a team, you had to grow because the way you guys were looked at in your first year and then the target on your back in your sophomore year, it had to make it a totally different approach as far as who you were competing against. When you went into your sophomore season, could you tell the difference in how the teams approached not only IU but you in general defensively?
Yeah, definitely. It was, like you said, it was a whole different feel to the season, just because my freshman year is kind of, we were always the underdogs. Everyone was picking against us, and you know, this year everyone was, you know, flip the switch, and you know, everyone was picking for us, and you know, everyone, I think the biggest thing is everyone was preparing for us, even in the summer, preparing for me individually and preparing for the team, just because, you know, if you can upset, you know, number one Indiana and, you know, shut down, you know, Cody Zeller, then, you know, that changes the whole program for some of these guys, especially the coaches. You know, it could propel their future as a coach. So, you know, we had a bullseye on our back the whole year, but, you know, we handled it fairly well just because, you know, we realized that we just had to prepare that much harder for every game.
Yeah, and the evolution in the season, it's always there. It's not just in the summertime and then you go play games and then you hope to improve. You're always evolving and improving and expanding your game, especially if you're going to be successful. You guys were number one ranked for many weeks. You did a great job in the Big Ten tournament. You did a great job in the Big Ten season. You go in the NCAA. But let me just ask you about from the early part of the season and then into Big Ten play. Early in the year, Cody Zeller shocked the world in how well he ran. Everybody knew you could run the floor, but I think you shocked so many people at how well you guys got out with the ball and how well you were consistent in sprinting the floor. As soon as the shot was rebounded, it came off, you were gone. You were down the floor, and I know that was part of the game plan, but as teams started to adjust to that, how did you have to adjust your game from going to that sprint out to now probably meeting physically somebody down every step, every inch of the floor you went, somebody banging you down the floor? How did you change and evolve during the season because of that?
Honestly, I didn't change anything that I've done. I think my, you know, how I was coaching in high school kind of developed how to run the floor just with my high school coach is big on that. I've run with all the guards and all of our conditioning drills in high school and college. So, I've always run the floor really well. And, you know, if a team has the game plan for me running the floor, then, you know, that's going to, you know, take away from their other time they could be preparing for something else. So, you know, I just ran the floor hard, whether it was, whether they were game planning for it or not. And, you know, if I can steal a few easy buckets here or there, then I would take the opportunity, but, you know, it's just a little extra thing that they have to prepare for and something that, you know, most teams that don't have to prepare for. So just a little extra dynamic.
Well, and you know what, how you answer that leads me into this next part of the question. It's a perfect segue. Because they're focusing on you and because they're trying to stop you in some of those runouts and how you're getting down the floor, the other guys have to step up, and they have opportunities to evolve. Were you surprised at how good Victor was this year? You were with him every day in practice, workouts, game situations going through last year and this year. Were you surprised at how he evolved and how his game expanded and basically rose to such a level?
Not at all. I mean, like you said, I work with him every day, and his work ethic is one of the best on the team. And, you know, I wasn't surprised at all just because he had been doing that all summer, last summer, and, you know, in practice every day. And so I wasn't surprised. I think really our whole team worked well together. Me and Vic especially work well together just because, You know, we can. It's tough to guard both of us, especially in the pick and roll or things like that. So, you know, we open up a lot of things for each other.
Well, you know, you're very fortunate. You did have a great high school coach, Gene Miller, and I coached against him several times when I was coaching, and we had some battles. And you have a great family, great mom and dad, and two older brothers that have kind of led the way and shown you a direction. Now that you're getting ready to embark on what's sad for many IU fans, but we're happy for you going into the NBA and an opportunity to be a lottery first-round pick. When you talk to Luke, who had his time in the NBA most recently with the Phoenix Suns, and Tyler, who's with Cleveland, Cody, are they giving you any advice on what you need to be prepared for, or how you need, or what you need to expect as you make this next step towards the NBA?
Not so much, you know, nothing monumental as far as advice or anything like that. But all three of us are really close, and you know, I talk to both of them, you know, a couple times each week. So, you know, I was asking a lot of questions throughout the season, through the ups and downs of the NBA season. So. I feel like I'm more prepared for what's coming in the future for me. But, you know, every step from whether it's high school to college or college to NBA is a big step. And, you know, it's just one of those things you have to, you know, learn for yourself, experience for yourself, and, you know, try to get better from it. So I'm excited for the experience.
I think Joe's got a question right now.
All right.
Yeah, Cody, real fast, I want to put you in a time machine, and I want to play you a little clip, and afterwards you can tell me how tall you were, first of all, at the time, and how excited you were, okay?
All right.
This is something Luke had never heard either before I played it for him.
State championship on the line here. Let's see what the Hatchets can do.
Okay. So let's see what they're going to do. They're going to put everybody down here. So they're going to let him run the floor. And it's going to go to Zeller. Zeller will let it fly.
Got it! Oh, my God! He got it!
He got it!
He got
it! A three!
He got it!
Luke Zeller hit a three! And the Washington Hatchets win! The Washington Hatchets win! The Washington Hatchets win! The Washington Hatchets win! That's an All-American! That was an All-American shot! Hatchets win! Hey! Hatchets! Hatchets!
Okay, Cody, that was from WRZR. That was the call of Luke's shot, and just wanted to kind of get your feelings. Were you 6 foot yet at the time, or what?
I can't remember. I was in sixth grade. Luke is 6 years older than me. And I don't know how tall he was, but I was, you know, front row for it. It was, you know, one of the shots that will live on in Indiana high school basketball history for a long time.
Well, and you would go on to win several state championships. So it's been a great run for the Zellers at Washington, and now you at IU, and now you're going into the NBA and into the draft process, and you're in workouts right now. Cody, have your workouts changed for you as far as what you're working to develop, how you're looking to expand your game as you prepare for the draft?
Not too much. You know, throughout the season and even now, you know, you're always working on your weaknesses. You know, try to improve on those, but also, you know, you got to keep your strengths, you know, as a strong point. So, as the workouts come, you know, we're still working with our strength and conditioning coach. You know, Coach Green has been working me out, so I feel like I'm very well prepared for what the workouts that I have coming up.
We had a question from one of our listeners, Cody. Craig Schneider wanted to know if adding a mid-range jumper will be part of the things that you will focus on expanding your game in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I shot, you know, I have a fairly good mid-range jumper. I use it a lot more in high school. You know, this year I just didn't feel like it was the best for our team just from a percentage-wise, just because, you know, we have six guys who could easily score 20 points on any given night. So with so much offensive power that we had this year, I didn't feel like I needed to use it as much. But, it's just but I'm definitely working on it more, and definitely I'll need that in the next level.
And when you think about your time at IU and the school year is going to be coming to an end, and you may probably continue some classes and get your graduate degree at some point, but what are you going to remember most about being a Hoosier going to Indiana University?
Probably playing at Assembly Hall. We had some unbelievable games, obviously the Kentucky game, but also, so many night in and night out, whether we were playing, Kentucky or a non-conference game, it was always a loud atmosphere. And, it's so easy to play hard in those games just because you got so much adrenaline from the crowd. And, you don't see as much of that in the NBA. So it's definitely one of the things that I'm going to miss and one of the things that I'll remember for a long time.
Okay, Cody.
Well, Joe, go ahead, Joe.
Okay, yeah, we have yet one more question here, a question and a comment. It's from Luke Holes. He's originally from Jasper. He's up near Nashville, Indiana right now, and his comment was, great pick for an interview. First of all, thanks for choosing IU. I enjoyed watching you play. Good luck in the NBA. Question is, did you enjoy your opportunity at IU, and would you choose IU again if you had the chance to do it all over again? I think I probably know the answer to this after the last comment. So,
yeah, I would in a heartbeat. When I made my decision, I had high expectations for Indiana on and off the basketball court with the Kelly School business and then everything that Coach Crane and the players had here. But my experience over the past 2 years has been everything I expected plus more. So there's never a day that goes by that I regret it. And, I'll always consider myself a Hoosier.
Cody, do you have, I mean, you're still a young guy and you're sophomore in college and you're ready to take this next step. Is there anything, any apprehension? I mean, is there any apprehensions, any concerns that you have about taking the next step in your journey?
There's a lot of unexpected things, unknowns that are coming. As far as, I have no clue what city I'm going to, a lot of stuff like that, but, I'm excited for the experience. I've dreamed of playing in the NBA for my whole life, and, I've had a great 2 years here at Indiana, and, I'm definitely excited for what's coming, and, a lot of people would love to be in my shoes, so I'm definitely very thankful for everything that I've been given.
Well, last question, Cody. You've been in the spotlight a long time, from the time your family got into Washington, Indiana, which is a crazy basketball town and state, to going up to IU. A lot of people grow up and want to be in the spotlight or wonder what it's like to be in the spotlight. What have you learned in your short life and your young, you're starting to reach that adulthood period. What have you learned about being in the spotlight?
It has its perks. It's good and bad in a lot of different ways. You're the one that's going to be criticized for a team losing, but you're the one that gets the praise for when the team wins. So the biggest thing that I do is I just ignore all the media, just because the media is so up and down with, one day you're a hero and one day, you shouldn't be starting. So, if you follow the media, it's just such a roller coaster. So I just try to ignore it all and just stay, level-headed, try to ignore the praise, ignore the criticism, and just stay on a level path, and it's been working out for me so far.
Yeah, I love that answer. It really is about the peaks and valleys in life, period. We've got a couple minutes left, and, And I know your family has appreciated all the blessings and support you guys have had. And you and your family have something that's very close to you. You started it. Distinction Camps. It's a program that your family's involved in. And these last couple minutes, Cody, can you tell our listeners a little bit about the Distinction Camps?
Yeah, so it's Distinction with an X. You know, you can get on the website at distinction.org. It's a company that Luke originally started, but the whole family is kind of on board with it now. But we do Christian basketball camps around the state and even in the, you know, in Ohio and some of the other states throughout the summer. But, you know, we've had so many great people that have helped us get to where we're at now. And we just like to give back to the kids. You know, like I said, it's Christian basketball camps, but we also teach, you know, the values that all three of us have grown up by. And, you know, it's a great program, and, you know, we're excited to interact with the kids this summer.
And you and Tyler and, well, you now for sure, and Luke and Tyler are all a part of it and on-site and involved with the kids.
Yeah, we try to make it to as many as we can, obviously. All three of us are very busy, but we try to make it to whichever ones we can. And it's always fun to interact with the kids.
No, that's awesome. And you appreciate, again, I can tell as a family, you guys have appreciated your journeys so far in your lives and the blessings you've received. And I know that so much more is going to happen for all of you, from Luke to Tyler and now you as you move forward in the NBA. Really appreciate you taking the time to be with us, Cody. And we ask our listeners to make sure that if you got a young son, daughter that want to be involved in a great camp that's got great values involved, go to Distinction and check it out and be a part of what Tyler and Luke and Cody are doing and giving back to the young people. So, Cody, once again, thanks a lot for being with us and continued success and blessings as you move forward to the next level in the NBA.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. That was Cody Zeller, and we certainly appreciate him being with us. When we come back, we'll talk to another important program that's getting started, and that's deals with football. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Fat Boy is a P.I.G. pig.
See if you can guess what I am now. I'm a zit. Get it?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. That interview was with Cody Zeller. That was from last week. We had a lot of requests from people that wanted to hear the interview with the highly popular Cody Zeller. But now we're going to switch shoes here. We're going to put our Purdue shoes on, which are the shoes I always wear. And we are joined by Chris Emma of the Boiler Sports Report. Chris, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, Joe.
Hey, Chris, you know, before we get started talking Purdue sports, why don't you let us know a little bit what the Boiler Sports Report is and how people can access it.
Yeah, site this was revived as of a couple months ago now. It's kind of starting to fly by fast here. And, it's, you know, dedicated to covering Purdue football, basketball, recruiting, women's basketball, baseball. We're kind of trying to do as much as we can here. And it's BoilerSportsReport.com. It's part of the Scout.com, Fox Sports Network, and I think I'm excited that we got some good things going here. So definitely check us out and kind of grinding away and having some fun with it.
But, yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about your site, and you know, a lot of good information coming from it. And if you are a Purdue fan, you go to his website and get some great information on some insight on recruiting and also on the current teams. And you know, speaking of Purdue, first of all, let's get started with football. We've just got done with spring football practice. Coach Hazel's a new coach for the Boilermakers, and you know, give us your impression on Coach Hazel by being around the program this spring.
He's a really bright guy, and there's a lot of attention to detail. It's the first thing that stands out. So many things that are planned and so carefully, and yeah, he's an interesting guy to watch during practice because he's not doing so much coaching. You know, and he's not, by that I mean, like, he's not in his guy's face. He's not so much involved. He lets his assistants do most of the work. He trusts them to coach his guys up, and he's sitting there and he's watching and he's evaluating, and he's everywhere. He's all over the field, taking in as much as he can. And you can see, I mean, there's a lot going on in his mind. It's obvious that he's just standing there watching everything and trying to really take in as much as he can about this team because he's still learning so much about it. So he's really letting his assistants kind of take charge. And there's so many things that are just, like I said, really carefully planned. I think that's just kind of the best way to describe them. The little details from the way he goes about practices to little side events to the way he's been involved in the community. There's so many things that are really kind of a part of his overall plan of building up Purdue to be a championship-level program while also building fan support and a lot of excitement around the community here.
You know, and that's one thing I've noticed, you know, We at Purdue, we're a very conservative place, and it seems like social media and stuff like that haven't caught on a whole lot in that. But with Coach Hazel and his staff, you know, it really seems like that they're going to get in tune with today's kids, and I think that they're going to have dynamic personalities, and which could draw some great players to the Boilermakers.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, these guys, they've really embraced the idea of social media and interacting and kind of building up the Purdue name along with different things that they're trying to do. And it's unique. It's a really young staff and a diverse backgrounds for a lot of these guys. So they've really kind of embraced the idea of being a Boilermaker and spreading all the positivity that they feel around to Purdue fans and recruits and everybody that they need to.
Now, he was late coming to the table as far as recruiting went, but they seemed to put together a nice solid class. And who are some of the guys that you're looking to maybe contribute early for the Boilermakers out of this first recruiting class, Coach Hazel's?
Yeah, it kind of starts with Danny Etling, frankly. I mean, you know, he's a kid who should be in high school right now, and suddenly he might be in line for the top spot at quarterback. So he's certainly the first guy you got to pinpoint when he's battling with Rob Henry and really neck and neck for that starting job. And then another guy I really liked during spring ball is David Yancey, the running back. Another guy who should be a senior in high school, came in early. Coaches are really high on him, and both of those guys really, they show poise and more importantly confidence to be a college football player right now when they should be learning and developing. And you see leadership traits and things that you want to see from a guy that you would expect to see from a senior. You're seeing that from a guy who's a high school senior. So really a lot of the encouraging things out of those guys right from the start. And, you know, the potential, how good they can be, who knows? I mean, there's so much that needs to be taught and there's so much that needs to be developed with these guys. But the earliest signs that you saw were really positive.
Now, you know, Purdue's known as the cradle of quarterbacks, I guess if you went to the spring game, you got a little taste for possibly what Coach Hazel might be running. But give our listeners who weren't able to go to the spring game, what kind of offense this scheme does Coach Hazel like to run?
He's left a lot of the offense in the hands of John Shoup, his offensive coordinator. Guy who's I talked about diverse backgrounds. He's got one of those where he's involved in the NFL for years. He's been to countless stops in his young coaching career already. But he likes that play action type offense. There's a lot of play action, a lot of motion, a lot of movement pre-play. And for the most part, the quarterbacks are going to be under center. You'll see shotgun here and there, but it's vastly different from what you saw with Coach Hope before in that kind of system. Now you're going to see a lot of you know, using the run to set up the pass. And I think they're really confident in Kareem Hunt and being not only the starting running back, and but possibly an elite Big Ten running back. So I think the offense is really going to revolve around Hunt, and then you're going to let the quarterbacks kind of have some freedom to work with what he's going to do. You hope he can keep on putting up the numbers that he has in the past in a full-time role, because if you do that, then the offense is going to be so much better all around him.
Now, you know, you got to see him this spring and got to see kind of what we all have coming back. What do you think's a high-end prediction for Boyle? What would be their watermark, their high mark next season, do you think, as far as wins?
Oh, boy. I mean, they could easily win 8 games. I mean, they, you know, 8-9 games. I mean, 6 wins last year wasn't what people wanted to see, but they made the most out of a season that looked like it was really spiraling out of control. It's hard to tell at this point because, you know, like I said, I've spoken so highly of Coach Hazel, and rightfully so. I think he's done a great job so far, but he hasn't coached a football game at Purdue yet, so who knows? I mean, he's had a winning track record. He's won everywhere he's been. But that being said, I mean, this is a different kind of different set of circumstances here. So I think he can be a great coach, but also, I mean, it's hard to put a prediction on a guy like that who you wonder. I mean, you know, coming over from the MAC, you wonder if everything's going to translate over the way that he sees it.
Okay, let's change directions here and let's talk basketball. You know, for us Boilermaker fans, it was kind of a tough season, but you know, we probably should have had an idea with all the newcomers, you know, playing vital roles that maybe it was. First of all, do you see that our roster, as far as people leaving, is it intact? Is that part of it done?
Yeah, I think the floodgates have been closed, and I think you've seen the last of the departures here. Barring something that, I mean, anything could change, of course, but, you know, the postseason flood has been finished.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the highest, let's say, what's made the newspaper the most as far as our transfers from Purdue has been Sonny Marchus. And, you know, there's been a lot made of it that Purdue's not paying for his summer school to finish up his degree so he can transfer. And on a personal note, my daughter played college volleyball and transferred from Marshall University to Florida International last year. And if we would have asked Marshall to pay for her summer school, they probably would have laughed at us. what's your insight on that? Do you have any understanding on why Sandy might be thinking that Purdue would still be paying for is finishing up his degree?
Yeah, I heard from the source close to Sandy a while ago. They were kind of seeing this could be a problem, but I honestly wrote about it a couple of days ago. I mean, this is just kind of the realities of the situation. Sandy can't expect for his class to be paid. When you ask for your release from your scholarship, the thing which is paying for your classes, and you're granted that when you're leaving the team voluntarily, and when the coaches want you to stay, I mean, you can't expect anything to be different but paying for your classes here. You know, it's his fifth year now. I understand he had a change in majors, which forced him to be late on the graduation now, where he is doing it now instead of last year. Set of circumstances are understandable, but you can't expect Purdue to be paying for this. And I know, you know, in a perfect world, you want to see the school take care of its student athletes, and, you know, there's a giant budget that they have allotted to scholarships where, I mean, $7,000 out of the $66 million or whatever it is, I mean, that's nothing. But you can't expect it when you're leaving the team, when you're saying, okay, I'm done with you guys and moving on. I mean, he can't be expecting this to work out his way. And I think he or whoever has been helping him and advising him, I think they were a little naive to thinking that everything would just kind of take care of itself and he'd be able to graduate and be free on scholarship. But you know, take out a student loan, you're going to get the engineering degree from Purdue. I mean, that's about as good as it gets right there. So it'll all be worth it in the end. Right now, it's a little bit of a cluster, but, I mean, that's the way it shook out, and rightfully so.
Now, would there be any way that the team that wants him could possibly help him out, or is this something he's going to have to take care of on his own?
I don't believe through NCAA rules that anybody else could jump in and pay for it. I'm pretty sure it has to come out of his pocket. And the messy part about this is that he needs to actually be a graduate to obviously be a graduate transfer with these NCAA rules. So that has to happen first. And, I mean, I don't know exactly how the fine print works. I think you might be able to announce your intention to transfer and get on scholarship somewhere else before with the agreement that you're going to be graduating here at the end of the semester. So he might be able to make it official soon, but obviously he has to have he has to have his two classes taken care of to be a Purdue graduate and then move on. So it's a little bit of a messy situation.
Now, talking Purdue basketball, I mean, you know, you lost DJ Bird, but, DJ kind of had an off year for senior year, but you've got a lot coming back. But they're still going to be a very, very young team. I mean, juniors or seniors next year, if I'm mistaken, Travis Carroll, and is that it? It's off the top of my head I'm thinking here. But, you know, it's going to be very heavy down at the sophomore and freshman level. And kind of give us an overview on we've got three freshmen coming in, three freshmen that everyone's very high on. Can you give us a little overview on all three of them?
I think the best thing you can say right now, the best thing about freshmen is that they become sophomores. And, you know, some of these guys talking about AJ, for example, some of these guys who really struggled this year, and it was a tough learning process, but then they got a year under their belt. They got Big Ten experience, and the year did not go at all what Purdue wanted it to be. But, I mean, that being said, you got a lot to learn from and a lot to move forward with into next season. So that's certainly encouraging. As for the incoming freshmen, you got a lot of potential there. You got some guys who are really ready to work and bust their butts for Purdue. So there's a lot to be excited about. Those three really fit what Purdue is looking for in this class and some of the role players that they need for next season. So I think there's a lot to be excited about. Last year, obviously bad. I mean, that's not what you wanted, but the pieces are in place for this team to really be a good team next year.
Yeah, with three scholarship positions open for next season, do you see Purdue banking some of that? Do you see them going after a fifth-year senior recruit or something like that? Or what do you think they're going to be doing with those three scholarships?
Ideally, they'd be able to get a fifth-year senior recruit. They want to get a sharpshooter, somebody like that, maybe an extra big man to fit their needs. But it's easier said than done. I mean, there's a limited market of these, the Sandy Marchuches, frankly, that are looking to go somewhere. And every school wants a fifth-year senior guy, somebody that can just slap into your lineup, play right away. I mean, it's a perfect situation. So I don't know if that's going to work out for Purdue. And they're not going to bring somebody in who they don't believe in. If it's somebody who's just kind of really not going to make an impact, well, then why bring him in? So they're going to be banking a lot into 2014. A few of these scholarships will be put away. There's a lot of talent. This is a really good class. And Purdue's done a great job recruiting that. They're in some of these guys like Vince Edwards and Tyler Ulis. There's a lot of talent in this class, and they really believe that they can bring in maybe three, four talented prospects. So they're really kind of looking ahead to that with the scholarship situation. Right now, I mean, the roster is intact, and hopefully it'll stay that way. Some good pieces in place, and it could be a really good team.
Now, people are starting to look to the 2014 class, and I know two of the big names in that class that people keep mentioning are Vince Edwards and Dakota Mathias. I'm not sure how to say his last name. They're both from Ohio. And do you see I know Mathias' stock's apparently rising a little bit with his showings in AAU. And what do you feel like Purdue's chances are about getting either one or both of those two?
I think they got a good shot, honestly. Edwards, it's Purdue or Michigan, and I think everybody's cautiously optimistic about that after seeing McGarry and Robinson leave the idea of Purdue to go to Michigan. But I think this one's going to shake out Purdue's way. And then, aside from Edwards, you got Trevor Blewett, you got Reed Travis, I mean, and Tyler Ulis, who I mentioned before. There's a lot of talent in this class and guys that they really feel good about. So, they got their top targets, but, I mean, they will be settling, taking in a few of these other guys as well.
Now,
fifth year senior banter. There's, you know, message boards are message boards, you know. they're not as reliable as a source like you. But, you know, is Purdue in on the Peck boy from, I think he went to Cathedral, but it also is going to be one of those fifth year transfers from Cornell?
I'm not sure who you're talking about, to be honest, but I've heard that. I mean, they've looked into a couple guys, and things have fallen through right now. So, as far as I've heard, they're actively searching. But that being said, they've not been able to come up with any strong possibilities yet. So, any particular names right now are pretty much just rumors at this point, and like you said, message board banter. But I think they're hoping they might be able to run into somebody here that they'd be able to bring in.
Now, with, you know, Purdue, as you just said, freshmen, the good thing about freshmen is they become sophomores. And looking at the Big Ten and some of the attrition that's happened through senior graduation, but also through Big Ten's lost some really good players going early to the NBA, where do you see Purdue fitting in the Big Ten this next season?
Honestly, I see them at the top and near the top. I mean, there's so much coming back and so much potential. I mean, of course, the question is, can some of these guys deliver and their potential? Can some of them live up to the promise that they came in with? And I think they're going to. Last year, with so much negativity and so many problems with that team, I think a lot of them are gone. And it's not – it's not guys like Anthony Johnson or Jacob Lawson that just didn't want to be a part of it, that, you know, they weren't the problems. I mean, it was an overall team culture that needed to be reworked. And I think at the end of the season, you really started to see some positive things. You saw the guys really busted their butts. You saw them playing the way that Matt Painter wants them to play. And I'm not in practice. I don't know what's going on there. But, I mean, Painter's the one who sees it all. And his frustration was so evident at the end of the year. He just wanted to see these guys work. He wanted to see them commit themselves. And, you know, honestly, I think you saw things starting to click in that CBI, which is exactly what Painter wanted. It was a horrible situation to be in. Purdue never wants to be in a CBI or NIT or anything like that, but they busted their butts. They played hard. Things really started to click, and you saw a little bit of the signs of what you wanted to see. You saw some work ethic. You saw energy on the court. And I think things like that are going to start translating over. This offseason is so huge, and you want to see these guys get in the weight room, get in the gym, and really try to improve. That's Matt Painter's greatest wish right now. But I think you're going to see a lot of positive things. I think, you know, the Big Ten's going to be loaded again. Things aren't going to die down from this year. But I think you're going to see Purdue have a presence at the top.
Now, you know, at the end of the season, you heard some Purdue players talking about other Purdue players, and there was a lot of high praise for Jay Simpson. Have you been able to see him in practice or anything and know what he brings to the table? We got to see him for a short while this year, but not at full strength.
Yeah, I haven't been able to see him, but, you know, speaking with Matt Painter a couple days ago, he loves him. I mean, he really is excited about him, and he's talking about playing him a little bit at center as well. I think you're going to see him possibly be the starting power forward. If not, you're going to see him kind of rotating in. But I think Painter ideally wants Simpson to be that guy who's pushing A.J. Hammonds as well. So you're going to see a lot of him on the court this year. He's going to be playing some big minutes, and I think he should be in line to potentially be a starter here. But I'm excited to see how things work out in this offseason and moving forward with him, because I think he's got a lot of potential to be a good player.
And, Rafe Davis, you know, we've heard so many things about him being a gym rat. And do you think, you know, I'm on the outside looking in, so I'm asking. You know, I'm one of those message board people that read things and try to read things into things. He seems like the type of guy that's a gym rat that's going to wear off on other kids, people are going to be in the gym working a lot harder at things. And do you see him, even as the sophomore, I mean, since we only have two seniors and one junior next year, do you see him being a leader in those, you know, on the team?
I do, yes. You know, you saw a lot of that as just a freshman. You saw him kind of play the role of a leader in a young team and kind of set an example for what some of his other teammates should have been doing. And, I mean, he's a guy that Friday night he's going to be in the gym and not at Harry's or something like that. He's busting in, and he wants to be a good player, and he's got that work ethic that Matt Painter wants to see throughout the whole team.
And lastly, Bryson Scott's coming in. He's a point guard. You've got Ronnie Johnson. And, you know, this past you know, there for a while, a painter seemed to be recruiting yet another point guard. Are his philosophies possibly to put two point guards on the court at the same time, or does Bryson maybe not fit the typical point guard position?
Yeah, I think you're going to see Bryson play more of a two role. I think they want him out there because they want shooters. They want some guys who can knock down some jumpers. And if anything, too, to try to push Rami into making better, because obviously he can be a really good player, but he's got a lot of work to do to get there. So I think they want to see Bryson maybe mix in with the one, play a little bit more of the two, though, and you know, knock down some Jays for them.
Okay, changing, just a few more questions. I know I've taken a lot of your time, but you know there's so many. When it comes to Purdue, I've always got so many questions, and I usually don't have access to someone who knows the answers like you. But baseball-wise, you know, we had a great baseball season last year. How's Coach Schreiber and the Boilermaker baseball team doing this year?
Oh, boy. It's been a rough run of it. They finally broke through on Wednesday night with a 15-run second inning. They were up 18-0 at the end of two. But, you know, they're 12-25 right now. They're 4-11 in Big Ten play, and Coach Drives is a bit frustrated, and rightfully so. I mean, this team, it's a rebuilding year. This team isn't anywhere near as talented as last year's team was, but I think he expected to see a little bit more, and I think he's extremely frustrated. I know he's extremely frustrated because after every loss, he's got a little bit of a rant for us as reporters about the way that things have gone. So it's been a rough run of it for the baseball team.
Okay, and lastly, I know I said lastly about five times, but I keep thinking of things. The new realignment, you know, it's just kind of proposed right now, and for football, first two questions here. A, what do you think about Purdue's alignment in that? And then B, will there be any alignment for basketball, or will it just be everybody put together?
Yeah, basketball is going to stay intact the way it is because they got a good system there, obviously, and it makes sense more for football to have the two divisions when you're setting up for a championship game like they have. A lot of people have been saying that the West is so much better for Purdue, and it'll be great to escape Ohio State and Michigan, especially because of the way that they've been recruiting, building each program up. They're going to be – I mean, they're going back to being the two dominant teams in the Big Ten again. It's going to be those two and everybody else. So it'll be good for Purdue to get away from that, but it's not like the West is a cupcake walk or something like that. You know, you've got Nebraska's going to be good. Northwestern's getting really good. Wisconsin's always going to be tough. Iowa's going to be tough. So, the West is the lesser of the two evils, but it's still going to bite pretty – it's still going to the doggy's going to have some bite on it.
Okay, well, you know, Chris, you know, we've enjoyed having you on here, and I hope that you will join us, you know, continue to be a Purdue contributor to our show. And go ahead and, you know, once again, and give you information on your website so we can get that out to our listeners.
Yeah, BoilersportsReport.com. It's a part of the Scout.com network, and Purdue football, basketball, women's basketball, baseball, and then, of course, a plethora of recruiting. We've got a great Midwest team providing so many updates, and we're really building our staff in Indiana, too, to provide coverage of Indianapolis and all around, and, of course, Purdue recruiting as well in the state. So got a ton of information coming your way, and things are just picking up. But, you know, it's a good time to join, and, I mean, just check it out, and, you know, articles are being tweeted out and Facebook, and you can't miss it. If you're a Purdue fan, you're going to want to get on board BoilersportsReport.com.
Okay, well, you know, we appreciate having you, Chris, and we hope to talk to you real soon.
Thanks for having me on.
And when we come back, we will start the rant with Kurt Gutzel, and I don't know if Don Schultheis is coming on again tonight, today or not, but also we'll be joined by Zach McCright of the ESPN St. Louis. ESPN St. Louis, he has a show called Zach and the Coach show that airs from 10 to noon every day, and we'll be talking Cardinal baseball and much more with him when we come back. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family, cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060.
Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
You were in Nam, so were we. Where?
I was in Sang Bang, Dangang. I was all over that place, basically. A lot of places.
What unit were you in?
I was with the Green Beret, Special Unit Battalion, Commando Airborne Tactics, Specialist Tactics, Unit Battalion. Yeah, it was real hush-hush. I was Agent Orange, that was my name, Agent Orange, Special Agent Orange, that was me.
Airborne, huh?
I can see! I have legs!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and I think I'm joined by the coach. Coach,
you
are there?
Joe. You are. The coach has joined the show and was able to catch your interview with talking Boiler Sports, and you did a great job.
Well, you know, it's easy for me to talk that because I've got so many questions anyways. I was, you know, I'm too cheap to buy a membership, so I was able to ask him. No, actually, Chris's site's a good site, and I am a member. But you know, anytime you have access to those insiders, you got to ask the questions, you know.
You certainly did. You didn't stop, and I'm sorry for cutting you off there. One thing I did not agree with, I don't know that Purdue really has a shot at Blewett.
Oh, I've heard a lot of that exactly what you heard, but, you know, I don't know. I'm not an insider. But, Coach, I'll tell you what, I need to go get Zach McCracken, but I've got a question here that was tweeted to me earlier waiting for you. So I will ask you this, and then maybe you can answer it, and I'll be back with Zach. It's from Mark, and he lives in Madison, Indiana. We've got someone over in Madison, Indiana, listening to us. He's asking, what's your opinion on Monte Teo still waiting to be drafted?
Well, I think that the interesting thing about the draft, Mark, is that in watching it last night, there wasn't a lot of surprises. But I think that I think Teo is more a celebrity of the media than he is of the draft boards. And I think that a lot of people look at him as a good player, but I don't know that any of them look at him as an impact player. And the one thing that I would say, Mark, and anyone else that's wondering about Teo's situation, is that, you know, Notre Dame has this mystique about it. It carries this mystique, and people sometimes confuse the mystique of Notre Dame and being on national television all the time with just how good some of their players are individually. And I think Taylor is a good player. I think that in the Alabama game, some of his flaws or weaknesses showed up. You know, they say, well, you can't go off one game, but I think when you play in Alabama in a game for all the marbles, and Alabama has a roster that has a lot of NFL, future NFL players on it, potential, I think that really hurt his draft status. And I think what people need to understand is that sometimes the hype and the hullabaloo and the great tradition and legacy of Notre Dame sometimes outshadows the true ability of some of their players. I think we've seen it with quarterbacks that have gone into the NFL over the years. Running backs, linemen, they get in there and they don't perform. I think Eifert, who's going to the Bengals, is going to do a great job. I think he's going to have a great career. But I really think that I didn't expect Teo to go early. I don't think a lot of people, when you sat down and really thought about it, really thought he would go early. I think his legendary status was hyped up with the story that was concocted. And I got to tell you, I still don't believe that somebody that goes to Notre Dame did not have real insight on what was going on with all that. So I'm not surprised. I thought it was interesting. So much of the media wants the glory positions to be the ones that people go for. And I'm not talking about Tao right now. I'm talking about the quarterbacks and the running backs. But yesterday, watching that first round, it was clear that position players on the line were keys in teams being able to be successful. And I thought one of the other things was interesting was the quarterback from Florida State going where he did in the first round. I was scratching my head as well, but I am not an NFL expert, a draft day board expert, but I think a lot of people were kind of surprised. Buffalo, they need a lot of things. I don't know that a quarterback who's in kind of a gray area is what they needed. So that's where I would leave it, Mark. And I love Tao because I love Notre Dame, but it doesn't surprise me. And the legend is much bigger than maybe the talent. And I think, Joe, you're back.
Yes, I am back, and we are joined by Zach McCrite of the Zach and Rammer Show. He's with Zach McCrite and Dave Ramsey that on ESPN St. Louis that runs from actually 10 to noon our time. And, Zach, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Zach, this is Coach K. It's great to have you on the show. And, you know, I was wondering, you know, I thought we'd talk a little baseball today, at least that's what Joe and I thought we would do. And the thing about Major League Baseball is good and bad. It's a long season, that's good, and it's a long season, that's bad. And here we are still in April part of the season. We see some individuals playing well. We see some teams that are floundering to start and some that are up at the top. Just real quickly, what are your impressions of these first few weeks of the baseball season?
There are some surprises out there. I mean, in terms of Major League Baseball in general, I don't think anybody really saw the Braves getting out to as hot a start as they did. I think a lot of people had the Braves as a playoff team. But to get out to where they're, you know, starting 10-1, 11-1 on the year, they cool off the Smiths. But I don't think anybody saw that coming. Justin Upton, who, you know, is obviously a Brave now, hitting, I think, 11 home runs. He's on pace for 92 home runs this year. He has 11 in his first 21 games. I mean, that's insane. So I think that's one big surprise. And the other big surprise is probably the Colorado Rockies, a team who I think by all accounts, or at least most, we're going to probably miss the playoffs this year and still might. But like you said, it's early, it's still April. But they're often leading a National League West division that is already hopping pretty good, or was before the year began, with the Los Angeles Dodgers making big money moves all over the place, the San Francisco Giants, defending World Series champs. So, you know, those are a couple of the big surprises. And, you know, I think the other one, I hate to be so National League centric, but I think the other real big surprise right now is the National League Central, where the St. Louis Cardinals reside, as do the Cincinnati Reds. And you know, right behind them, if not right up with them right now, are the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Milwaukee Brewers. They're all four teams are within, last I checked, within a game of the lead, all four. The only team not up there is the Cubs. The other four teams in the National League Central right now, in their last 10 games, are a combined 29-11. So all four of those teams at the top of the National League Central are pretty hot right now. Those are probably the three or three of the bigger storylines right now in Major League Baseball.
I'm a little surprised. You know, I thought last year that Pittsburgh was a great story, and they didn't surprise me when they faltered a little bit at the end. But I am going to say that I am surprised that they have started out so well again this year. And I guess maybe I haven't taken the time to really look deeply at their roster and their pitching staff. I know they've got some solid people, but I find it interesting that they've started out well again. I mean, it's not great. They're 13-9, something like that. It's not great, but again, they're right in between, right in there with St. Louis and with Cincinnati. I still think Matheny And the Cardinal organization has just done a tremendous job with those Cardinals. They really have, you know, they've interchanged some people out. They have a couple of good names. They have solid pitching, but it just seems like whoever they plugged in those positions, Zach, have just seemed to come through for them time and time again. And here they are, 13-8 or something like that, on top of the division.
Yeah, they're, you know, it appears like that. I'm with you. It's like that almost every year. You're just kind of going, all right, when does the drop off occur? I have been one of those critics here, or maybe not a critic as much as I am a skeptic here in St. Louis. You know, I'm a big Tony La Russa guy, and I know some people, and I think it's a small faction, aren't really big Tony La Russa guys, but I happen to be one. And I was one of the guys that when he left, and so did Dave Duncan, the legendary pitching coach who should be a Hall of Famer. You know, when those guys left the organization, I really thought that this franchise was eventually, maybe not in year one, but eventually going to take some sort of downward turn for no other reason than, you know, it's just not having those, not just the baseball minds and guys like La Russa and Dave Duncan, but just the way in which they approached the game and the mentality in which they approached each game and each day that you could tell being in the clubhouse every day rubbed off on the players. And that hasn't happened yet. It still has not happened yet. So, you know, some of those, it must have rubbed on them enough to where that stuff hasn't gone away yet on a lot of these players that are still around. Yadier Molina, you know, Matt Holliday, Alan Craig, David Freese, World Series MVP. You know, there's just a lot of really solid talent, but really some solid people with the organization as well. And in terms of this season so far for them, you know, and I know there's, you know, 13-8, you know, nothing to write home about. You know, if nothing else, it's just 21 games into the season. But, you know, 13-8, you go 13-8 every month or somewhere there about. You go five games over 500 every month of the year, and you're going to be 100 wins. You're going to be a 100-win team. And so I think everybody's fine with the start that the Cardinals had. I just think it's kind of been a bass backwards sort of start to the season by the Cardinals from this respect. The big worry going into the season was the starting pitching of the St. Louis Cardinals. Adam Wainwright, who had an okay season by many standards, did not have necessarily a great season by Adam Wainwright standards last year, which was his first season removed from Tommy John surgery. So you're still not, you weren't quite sure what you were going to get from him. Jaime Garcia left the team last year because of a shoulder nerve issue. Nobody knew how long that was going to last. People have questioned what he's got in between the ears as well. Another starting pitcher, you know, so that right there has been a problem. Lance Lynn, who was this team's basically leading starting pitcher last year, you know, he had a terrible spring training. He had lost like 50 pounds, and he had, you know, as much as we love, you know, losing weight, it really messes mechanics. Question, so it messes mechanics all spring long. He's figured it out, though. Kyle Loesch last year was a Cy Young candidate, and he leaves the team in free agency and goes to the Milwaukee Brewers. So, and then the fifth starter, Shelby Miller. Shelby Miller's a rookie. So there were so many questions, and then we're 21 games of the season, and not only does the starting rotation lead the league in ERA, but they lead it by almost 6/10 of a run in front of second place. They're at a 2.3 ERA, and the next highest is at 2.98, almost three runs. So it's been a big surprise the way they've done it. The question's been the bullpen, and we thought it was going to be the other way around. We thought the bullpen was going to be a solid part of the team, and the starting rotation was going to be the big question mark, but it's indeed been the opposite so far.
Well, it sounds like, Zach, it sounds like that you're just – I'm listening to your voice, and I'm feeling like, yeah, you're feeling good about them, but you're waiting for maybe not an implosion, but some of those weaknesses to come up. I look at that team, and I think everything hinges on their pitching, staying strong, staying healthy. Matheny, I believe, approaches the game in a cerebral way, being a former catcher under Tony La Russa. He's not Tony La Russa, there's no doubt about it. There's only going to be one. He's probably not, and this is just my take, not yours, as manipulative as Tony is, but cerebral in many ways. Are you concerned that there's one piece of this puzzle that maybe isn't going to fit properly, and these Cardinals, even though they're hanging around the top now,
what you were reading in my voice, you certainly grabbed something. It's not necessarily doubt in this team, as it is very, very unexpected, just the way in which they have done it. I feel like they are going to be a playoff team. I mean, I thought that going into the season. I didn't know if they were going to win the division, because I think the Reds are the better team, or at least were the better team on paper going into the year. But with the Cardinals, I'll just put it this way. What you hear in my voice is me going, okay, I didn't think the starting pitching was going to be good. It's been fantastic. It's been the best in the league through, you know, one-eighth of the season. I thought the bullpen was going to be great this year. Then Jason Mott, the closer for the Cardinals, who was the guy on the mound when the Cardinals won the 2011 World Series, he's got elbow issues that may keep him out, I'm being told, maybe the entire year. So now you're without your closer. And then so far this year, in 21 games, even though they're leading the division, they've blown 5 saves this year already. So you look at those two things and go, okay, you're expecting with the starting rotation there to be some sort of regression to the mean, if you pardon the term. And then with the bullpen, you know, maybe you expect it to improve a little bit, but you're still without your closer. This whole time, though, what I am comforted by is the fact that not only that you expect the bullpen to at least kind of shake itself out and not blow so many saves, which it hasn't recently. The team just comes off a sweep of the Washington Nationals, another team that a lot of people think is going to be in the playoffs, and they did it with 3 straight saves by Edward Mujica, who was a guy nobody knew about in St. Louis up until last year. Now he's saving games for the Cardinals, so you expect a little bit of a bump up in the rotation. That's good. You do expect the starting rotation to kind of come back to life and regress to the mean. That's not so good. But the one thing that you kind of go, you know, you expect it to get better, has been the offense. The offense is scoring runs, but they're kind of doing it in bunches, which, you know, you're not quite sure, is that good or bad? In other words, they'll have an inning where they'll score 3, and then they'll go the rest of the game with nothing but goose eggs. Now, that was enough to sweep the series against Washington. They scored 9 runs in the series, in a 3-game series, and won every game of the series. So that works sometimes, but in other games, is that enough? So you're kind of worried about the offense, but you also expect that to get better. So it's just the tone in my voice is not one of, wow, I don't expect this to last. It is one of, wow, I expected 13-8. I expected first place 1/8 of the way through the season to come a lot differently, and I still do expect that the rest of the way.
You know, let's just jump into another team in that division and what in the Sam hell is going on in Chicago? What, I mean, here is a tradition-rich city, tradition-rich club, not winning, of course. They're terrible, Zach. I mean, what kind of moves can they make to build this team up. I just shake my head when I look at the. I thought the Houston Astros were bad, and I look at the Cubs and I say, can they find themselves? They're 5.5 out. They may be as close in the division as they're going to be the entire season. I know we have Cub fans that listen, and they're probably not going to like what I'm saying here, and they may be laughing. I don't know, the laughable Cubs. But what? When does this thing turn around in Chicago?
Well, I mean, look, I surely Cubs fans that are listening aren't too upset with your comments if they're thinking big picture. I mean, you know, it's going to turn around. I mean, I have full faith in Theo Epstein and those guys that, you know, when they took over there in Chicago, they've got a plan. It worked in Boston. I really do think it's going to work in Chicago. That being said, it's not going to work this year. They're still in the rebuilding phase of this. Carlos Marmol, to me, he's just a travesty. And I've got to think that Chicago Cubs fans are with me on that. He is supposedly the closer for the Cubs, and he can't close the game. I mean, he just absolutely cannot close the game. So when the Cubs finally do get some runs on the board, you know, here comes Marmol in from the bullpen, and he can't finish it up. The offense has been very, very lackluster this year, and the bullpen has been a joke. It's a microcosm, and I mean microcosm in every definition of the word microcosm, of the St. Louis Cardinals. They're just, you know, the Cubs are the same way the Cardinals got to 13-8 are the same way that the Cubs are 8-13 or 8-14, whatever they are right now. Their offense is terrible, their bullpen is terrible, and they've got their 8 wins based on their starting pitching. I think the Cubs right now have the second best, if I'm not either second or third, best starting ERA in the entire National League, which blows your mind for a team who's been as bad as the Cubs have been. But their offense is very lackluster. Carlos Marmol is a dumpster fire, and it's going to be another year or so before they figure it out. If I'm a Cubs fan, I'm looking forward to the trade deadline and dumping some of the one or two of the better players for the Cubs. I know that's going to make everybody ill. You know, oh gosh, we're going to make the Cubs team worse. You are for the short term, for long term gain. At least that's what I would expect from Theo Epstein.
Well, keep the beer prices low at Wrigley Field so people keep
right.
coming out. They do anyway, but I have watched the Cubs now for a while, and I know we all have a lot of confidence in Theo Epstein's approach, but I as a manager, you're stuck there with subpar players that you're trying to build around a theory. You've got a closer who has never been a consistent or good closer, somebody who when it's the games on the line, people and they hand him the ball, people say we got this one, I think it's been like that in Chicago for several years, even before Marvel. I mean, it just seems like they hand the ball to the guy they think is going to be the closer, and he does everything but close. He opens it back up.
Yeah, it has been that way. And look, it does not surprise me when people who follow the Cubs feel this way. And I do. I almost feel sorry for him. I mean, I really do, because I know it's like this every single year. I mean, I grew up, I kind of a Cardinals fan, kind of secondarily, but I grew up in the Louisville area. So I'm 32 now. So when I was the first half of my life, all the way up till I was about 16 or so, the St. Louis Cardinals affiliate was the Louisville Redbirds. So I followed the Cardinals, and they were kind of my team. And then that slipped. The Cardinals moved their AAA team to Memphis. And then for the second half of my childhood up to when I moved here to St. Louis 2 years ago. The Louisville AAA team was an affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds. So I missed the glory years for the Cincinnati Reds in the early 90s when they won. And then, you know, when I start actually following the Reds, they lose year in, year out, year in, year out. And then I come to St. Louis, and while I do follow the Cardinals now, and it's fun, it was fun, you know, obviously following a Cardinals team, then the Reds get good, and they win a division, and they've been in the playoffs two of the last 3 years. So I believe, my point being, I was familiar for a very long time with a lot of losing baseball, so I know where Cubs fans are coming from. I find it difficult to put a lot of blame on Dale Swain. What are you going to do? There's really not a whole lot you can do. The mess needs to be cleaned up in the front office, and this is just part of yet another rebuilding process for the Cubs. You got to see if this new management group can figure it out in the next 2 to 3 years, and that's and in the meantime, it's going to be insufferable. But you just got to have faith, hopefully, that this management group is the one that finally gets you over the hump. But one thing I wouldn't do is I would not blame Dale Swain, at least not yet. I mean, he's been given a box of rocks and said, make a baseball team out of it. I think he's doing his best.
Yeah, I think that he is. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. That's the one thing, being a former coach, I hate to see him as the manager of a team. He's been given a hapless group and then trying to figure it out. It's kind of like the movie The Natural, waiting for Wonder Boy to show up and somehow pull out that magical batter in the closer's position, a magical ball that can help the Cubbies get themselves back into a position to be a threat in the division. Hey, before we let you go and the NFL draft, any surprises, any concerns, anything that you are waiting to see, hoping to see, somebody didn't get picked, got picked, shouldn't have got picked? Thoughts on that, Zach?
Well, I'll give you the national perspective, and then I'll give you what we kind of – here in St. Louis, we kind of – I guess the Rams are one of the big national stories today, among a handful of big national stories coming out of the first round of the draft. My national perspective is I think it's amazing where I think last night's draft was a microcosm. Really, this can go back to last year as well. Last night's draft and last year's draft, first rounds at least, are perfect examples of what kind of league the NFL is now. Last year, for example, you take five quarterbacks in the first round. Why? It's a quarterback league. I mean, it's just a quarterback league. All right, and then by extension, all right. Now, what do teams need to do to build, or what do teams need to do besides have a good quarterback to win? Well, on offense, you need to protect your quarterback, and on defense, you need to be able to get to the quarterback. So, what happened last night? Well, last year you had five quarterbacks get drafted in the first round. This year you had nothing but offensive linemen and defensive ends get picked everywhere, to the point where there was only, I think, two wide receivers taken in the first round of the draft last night, and zero, for the first time since 1969, zero running backs in the first round of the NFL draft. I think that's a huge microcosm for what the NFL has become in this day and age. It is a passing league. It is about your quarterback. It is about protecting your quarterback. And on the other side of the ball, it's about getting to the quarterback. Now, that being said, here in St. Louis, I know the big talk, I just got off the air, and the big talk today was, the Rams were the one team that kind of moved up in the draft and made a big splash for a playmaking wide receiver, one of the only ones taken in the first round, and Tavon Austin from West Virginia. And so that's a huge, huge get for the Rams. They got to have somebody for Sam Bradford. But I think from a national perspective, just keep an eye on that NFC West, the San Francisco 49ers, the Seattle Seahawks, and now Jeff Fisher rebuilding the St. Louis Rams team. I mean, the NFC West, which was a laughingstock just 2 or 3 years ago, is now arguably the best division in all of the NFL. So very, very interesting draft from that standpoint. I still think there are a lot of I talked to an NFL coach this morning, actually, because I wanted to get – it's a guy that I've had a relationship with, and I wanted to get his thoughts on Tavon Austin because for a local tie for my show today. And he wouldn't talk to me on air, but he talked to me off air. And he just – when I asked him about the draft as a whole last night, he just said – he goes, you know, I really think that you've got a lot – like he goes, I know we do. He said, we got a lot of team – or a lot of players left on our board right now that we've got first-round grades for. There's a lot of players left in this draft that starts again tonight that we would not have been surprised if they had been taken in the first round. So this is a very, very – it's not necessarily got the sizzle of an RG3 or an Andrew Luck sort of draft, but it is very, very deep. So I think you're going to see a lot of players get drafted tonight and even tomorrow – that are going to make plays very early in the season next year, and you're going to go, wow, he was drafted in the, you know, X round, second, third, fourth, fifth round. That's amazing. I think you're going to see a lot of that today and tomorrow.
Well, Zach, great stuff. And when you come back, I want next time let's talk some more NFL. I love Fisher. I think he's a great coach, and I think he's going to do what needs to be done. And before we go, can you let our listeners know how they can pick up your show?
Yeah, you can pick me up by going to 101ESPN.com, 101ESPN.com. That's our website. We stream live from there all day long. I'm on from 10 to noon Eastern time, and then people can follow me on Twitter. I'm an Indiana boy, born and raised from New Albany and Jeffersonville and all that. So I'm not too far down the road from you boys originally. So I'll throw in my high school sports thoughts and my IU and Purdue thoughts and my U of L and UK thoughts all the time. So feel free to follow me on Twitter at Big Easy, five letters, BIGEZ. I'll be all over the map with my thoughts on there. So follow me there.
Great having you. I do follow you on Twitter, and can't wait to have you back. We'll talk some more. We can talk a little bit about those Louisville Cardinals. Thanks for being with us, Zach.
You got it. No problem. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and we are on the rant that's being taped, listening on the podcast, but we're joined by Coach K and DC's DC Broadcasting Sports Director Kurt Gutzel. Kurt, how are you doing this fine Friday?
Hey, good morning, Joe, or good afternoon, guys. I'm glad to be joining you finally here this afternoon.
Well, you know, Kurt, that's probably my fault. I got talking about one of your favorite teams, the Chicago Cubs, with Zach and McGrite, and just, I don't know, time got away from us because we were talking about the haplessness of those Cubs, and why in the heck, and I'm going to ask you, because we are ranting right now, folks, why in the heck can't they hand the ball to someone who can actually close a game?
No, I was talking about myself. I've been running around all morning doing a lot but not getting a lot done. But to answer your question, there's nothing more demoralizing in a game for guys to work hard for seven innings, whatever it is, and hand the ball over to somebody, have them cough it up. Cardinal fans went through this a few years ago with Jason Isringhausen, but they kept running him out there, and that was part of Tony La Russa's philosophy, kind of like you guys were talking about with Dale Swain. This is the guy you're going to give me, so I'm going to run him out there, And that's what they do with Marmol. And, you know, he's kind of, you know, those are the guys that you're going to give me to play with. I'm going to use them. And it's not worked out very well. And, again, and it's just very demoralizing the way they pitch in the starting rotation. They haven't hit, but they've had some leads late. And, you know, of the thousands upon thousands of people that play baseball and the thousands of people that pitch in the minor leagues and the big leagues, that you can't come in there and get at somebody better than that if you're one of the 30 major league teams is beyond me. You know, I can't figure it out. But it's just the same thing. They continue to run him out there.
Well, my hope, Kurt, is that Dale doesn't take the brunt of all this. I think he's got, like you said, these are the guys you're giving me. I got to play them. I got to get them out there. And I hope that Theo is sitting in there, and as he constructs this team from his plan, from the ground up, and I understand that. I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
the Cub fans are going to stay loyal, and they're going to keep coming out to Wrigley. And as I said to Zach, keep those beer prices as low as possible to keep them coming out there. I look at his situation. I look at what they did in Florida with the Marlins, Houston, and you know what? You get what you pay for.
Oh, there's no doubt. Major League Baseball. That's that in. In so much in any that sport, in baseball, that is really the truth. But teams are bad in big league baseball because they can't starting pitch. And that's what's so amazing about the Cubs' start. They have been pitching well, but they haven't hit and they haven't played well in the back end of games. But Dale Swain's fine. But the problem with him is, you know, he runs his course, he builds a team back up, and when it's time to win, he may not be around to get some of those fruits of the labor. But it is what it is right now, and he's trying to, you know, and he's a competitor. He played for the Brewers with Yount and Molitor, and he's going to battle. And, you know, he was running a little hot earlier this week because guys just didn't execute. I mean, you can talk about the blown saves, but he was mad about the lack of execution, you know, covering first base or dropping down a bunt or, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, and how long will he go before he just says, I can't deal with this anymore? But then when you look at it on the flip side, like I said earlier, there are only 30 of those teams, 30 of those jobs. And if you got one, I guess you consider yourself lucky until they tell you not to come back to the park anymore.
Now, and I agree with that, and I understand that. And I know that I'm being a little a bit hard on the Cubs and Marmol and that. And obviously I couldn't get out there and throw a grapefruit to the plate at 5 miles an hour. But I just look at the money that the fans are being asked to pay and what's put out there, and you just think at some point, you know, we've got to have something in our pipeline that we can get competitive with. You know, a lot of teams, you may look at the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Angels and some of those other teams that have started out a little slow, and they'll get it going, the warm weather will come, and it'll start to click. But you don't say that about the Cubs. You don't say the warm weather is going to come and it's going to click. And maybe it will, but then you have to worry about all the other teams. The weather's going to warm up and they're going to click. And where does that leave the Cubs, who are 5.5 games out of the leader of their division right now?
Well, a few years ago, nobody spent more money in the Cubs. It didn't work. Now they're going to we're going to build this from the bottom up, which was a wreck. And that's why they were buying so many players, because they've never figured out how to develop, not only for yourself, but develop to go get some other pieces later on. But, you know, they believe in Theo Epstein, and what's 5 more years when you've waited for 105? So, you know, that's the Cub way, you know.
I'm with you, and honestly, I think that it's because of what they spent, it didn't work. I can understand, you know, why they would want to give this direction, and I'm okay with it. I just, man, if you can get somebody, if your starting pitching's at least doing a good job of keeping you in the game, you hope they can hand the ball to somebody, because, you know, that's a big mental thing. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that, Kurt, from a mental standpoint, emotional, to keep you – you know, you go out there, you're holding serve, so to speak, to use a different sport analogy, and then all of a sudden, it's gone with the guy that's supposed to get it done.
Well, again, it's very demoralizing, and sometimes that'll split a clubhouse. You know, a guy at the end not doing their job, I kind of equate it to guys working really hard in a football game and have it come down to a place kicker that misses consistently and doesn't, you know, finish games or whatnot. Or, you know, you play a great defense and offense for 39 minutes of a college basketball game and you miss free throws down the stretch, you know, knowing that the game was right there for your grasp. So, yeah, at the end of baseball games, it's tough to not be able to finish it off for your eight other guys that have hit, that have fielded. But also, it also breeds some contempt, I guess, a little bit with your starting pitching when they go out there and give you five, six, seven strong innings. And, you know, that's how those guys get paid, basically, on wins. And a lot of times when they leave with winning, you know, they leave with the win that they could get and they don't get it, you know, that's a day that their effort is wasted, so to speak. But, it's not a good situation to blow games at the end.
NFL drafts going on. Last night was the first round. I took it in. I'm sure you watched a little bit of it. I think there's one way to sum up this draft up at this point, and that's it's a trenches draft. It's the guys down on the line, in the dirt, in the positions where you got to grind it out. Teams trying to make sure that they can fill that line with people who, one, can protect that quarterback, that passer that the NFL has become, a passing league, and on the other side, somebody that can get around that corner, can get to that quarterback. Any surprises, Kurt? Anything that kind of shocked you or any club that you thought, what in God's name are you doing?
Well, my team, the Dolphins, are going to pick 12th, so they move up to 3 with a trade with the Raiders. And they have a good quarterback in Tannehill. They lost Jake Long, the big tackle who played at Michigan. He went on to another team. And they need somebody to protect Tannehill at that tackle spot. But in turn, they draft a defensive end, Deion Jordan from Oregon. Not only do they go opposite the offensive lineman by picking a defensive lineman, they pick a guy that is very sketchy, that wasn't really number 3 draft worthy, and that's not an opinion. That's or not an opinion of mine, but that's an opinion of the guys like Gruden. I mean, he's never at a loss for words, and he never riffs anybody. And that's one of his criticisms when he does Monday Night Football. He likes everything. You know, he likes everything in the draft. But he was shaking his head. He didn't know what to think. And I think a lot of Dolphins fans feel the same way. I mean, they needed a tackle. But if you're going to draft defense or whatever, why not pick Milner, the corner from Alabama? But to go with a guy like that who has some injury problems, missed a lot of big games at Oregon because he was injured, kind of a slender type of guy, a Jason Taylor type of guy without Jason Taylor resume at this point. And so that was a head-scratcher, not only as a Dolphin fan, but what everybody else that follows the draft thought too.
Yeah, in watching the draft, I remember the pick. I remember them talking about it. It was shocking to a lot of people. Not that this young guy doesn't have potential, and he does. He's like you said, he's kind of a long, thin guy. He's not a beefy guy. Tremendous athlete. Really goes at it. But in the scheme at Oregon, not only was he injured, but in the way they play defense. In that scheme, he was out on a lot of plays. So I think one of the talking heads, it might have been Gruden, I'm not sure, Mel Kiper, he said if he has to play 69 plays, it'll be the most plays he's ever played in his life. So it was a little surprising. What do you think about the Bills drafting the Florida State quarterback?
Well, E.J. Manuel, perhaps he and Smith, the guy from West Virginia, were the top two quarterbacks out there. And they say Manuel, when he went into the interviews and whatnot, when they actually watched game tape and watched the way he played, that wasn't much of a surprise. He's going to play for a guy that's coached in college, or, you know, the Marone from Syracuse. And they think he'll transfer pretty well to their Buffalo offense. But, you know, the quarterback spot in this draft, it's not very deep.
And, you know, Buffalo's probably going to run a scheme, and they were trying to fit that scheme with a quarterback that they can use. So, you know, that might have been a head-scratcher too, but he's pretty talented, and it just seems like if he can fit what they want to do, that's what you're after, not basically what, you know, everybody else thinks you should do.
Well, and I get that. I get that. I think for me, it looked like Buffalo on the board needed a lot more needs, immediate needs, than maybe what a rookie quarterback who's not even considered by many to be a first-round draft. And I'm not saying that he won't come out and tear up the league. I mean, stranger things have happened. But the question is, were they identifying needs that they need to take care of immediately? And bringing people into those spots, and I think that was the big question. And the other question I've got for you, Kurt, and I apologize, but I'm like Joe. Sometimes I can't remember the name. The overall number one pick, and I should, but the fact that he's from Central Michigan, maybe that's why I can't remember the name. Big kid, strong, can move, athletic. I think they said a 5'05" or maybe a little bit more than that in a 40. 300 pounds, literally in his career, Kurt, from what everybody's talking about, he's just kind of risen out from nowhere to become this kind of player, much like the guy at BYU that was picked third or fourth in the draft. So your thoughts, is a guy that plays at Central Michigan, has he gone against the competition, the athletic competition that makes him NFL ready?
Well, that's a tough question, but maybe a guy like that comes in under-recruited and just gets better, lifts better, you know, maybe grades out better. Maybe they've seen something on tape and on film that they like, and the guy was like a diamond in the rough. I mean, we've seen guys go the other way, some highly touted guys that probably should be playing in the MAC that were playing big-time football that never work. But, you know, especially at the lineman position where there's so many of them, you know, maybe a quarterback or a running back or a defensive back in the MAC may not be up to snuff to play at that level, but, you know, those guys know what they're looking for out of those linemen, and it's hard. I mean, it's hard for college recruiters to go identify a lineman in high school. So you try to maybe find some diamonds in the rough and guys you can work with and get them better through a four-year college span. Maybe those are the guys that are going to play well in the NFL if you can develop those guys, you know, maybe not ready-made offensive linemen when they first come to college. So, you know, it was a lineman draft, and that's what they decided to take. And this guy evidently is pretty good.
So if you're Geno Smith, how are you feeling today? You show up at the draft. Obviously, the NFL said, hey, come to the draft. All week, all month, leading up to the draft, he's here, and you're one of the top prospects at the quarterback, but you may not go in the first round. No quarterback may go in the first round. And other than the surprising pick by the Bills, there wouldn't have really been. So Geno's there, doesn't get picked. He says, I'm heading home. I mean, how are you feeling? I mean, I know you're not Geno Smith, and I know you're not a number one pick. You are in sports radio, but how are you feeling if you're Geno Smith right now?
Well, you know, it just depends what they told him. If they told him he was going to go in the first round, or he got a lot of positive feedback, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers sat there for a couple of days too, and he turned out all right. It's just based on need in some of those places, you know, and what you can get later on as opposed to let's get the best we can get right now. As Zach said, there's going to be guys the next couple of days that are going to be really, really impact players that weren't an immediate need for some teams. So maybe Geno Smith falls into that category, and I wasn't all that high on him to begin with. You know, I mean, West Virginia was a big disappointment. Maybe he was the cause of it, but, you know, there's been a lot of guys that sat in that room for a long time and didn't get picked.
Yeah, and when you talk about Aaron Rodgers, it makes me think back to that draft.
That was horrible for him.
Yeah, and you saw the pain going on at that time. But you know, you got to love that idea of how a career works. You take him in. He plays behind one of the great quarterbacks of all time. He gets a chance to mature, really understand the game from a strategy standpoint, the plays, what they're trying to accomplish. And even though they had the hullabaloo because Favre wasn't ready but was ready but wasn't ready, he steps in just much more mature, much more prepared. Really how how you'd like to see young quarterbacks come along, because a lot of times, Kurt, and we can go back to a lot of good quarterbacks that came out, went in the draft, highly touted, and they just weren't ready. And I don't know if it's ready physically, mentally, emotionally, or all of those things, but sitting back and being able to learn behind a guy for a couple years, it ain't all that bad.
Well, no, and the reason why a lot of those quarterbacks don't work, because, you know, they're not going to the Baltimore Ravens right off the bat. They're going to a bad team for a reason. And it's tough to pick that team up around you because you've been drafted so high because, you know, you're going to go to a bad team. You know, that's like these college basketball coaches that fail in the pros, you know, as coaches. You know, they didn't go to the Lakers right away. They were in Charlotte and New Orleans and wherever they were, you know. So it's tough for those quarterbacks to get drafted high out of college to go into those morbid programs and do well right away.
Yeah, and an example for me, and I know I'm going back, and a lot of our young listeners will not remember this name, but Jim Plunkett. You know, he came out of Stanford, I believe. New England had drafted him. I mean, they were horrible back then. He just was beaten to a pulp. It looked like his career was over. And then fortunately, he ends up hanging in there mentally, emotionally, and physically, and lands onto the Oakland Raiders and ends up having a great career before it was done. But what started with a lot of pomp really fizzled early for him, even though he was considered a great talent, but he got thrown to the wolves right away. Yeah. Support your point that you go to teams that aren't ready for a young quarterback to come in and lead their team.
Well, say Geno Smith goes in the middle of the second round to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and maybe Ben Roethlisberger has 2-3 years left, and he sits behind him. Don't you think that's a lot better situation for him 2 or 3 years down the line than going to some bad team and then being thrown in there right away? I know you all want to play and you pay that much money for a number one pick, but it might work out for a guy like that, you know, where you go to the middle-of-the-road team instead of the horrible team, and maybe you go into the middle-of-the-road team and beat somebody out right away. And everybody gets what they want. They got a quarterback, and they also took somebody earlier in the draft that can help them right away. So there's all kinds of different ways for teams to help themselves.
You know, leading up to the draft, the night or two before, I watched one of those great 30 for 30s that ESPN produces. They have some shows that really I wish they didn't have, but their 30 for 30s are outstanding. And it was from Elway to Marino. I don't know if you were able to catch that. It was really great to see how to be able to look back at those quarterbacks, where they ended up going to, how they were looked at. I love the Art Rooney, Chuck Noll, Pittsburgh talk about Marino. Art Rooney wanted Marino. Chuck Noll wanted to kind of stay with the scheme that they had. And, well, history goes from there. But it was great to see. You know, Todd Blackledge, you can see that he felt like, and I remember him coming out, I thought he was going to be an outstanding quarterback. He never felt like he got the reins in Kansas City and had the opportunity to really move forward. You know, I remember when Elway came out and made a stand about not playing in Baltimore, but it was really neat to listen to the behind the scenes in all that. I'm still not sure that he doesn't come out looking like a prima donna, but still.
Yeah.
It was a great show, and I don't know how you looked at it, but I thought it was a great precursor to going into this draft to really look at the draft and study it and say, who's going to be that group? Not quarterbacks, but what are the stories behind some of these choices, some of these picks?
Well, what I always find interesting, and it's like this with any organization, any business, you've got everybody in the building perhaps pulling different ways. You know, this group of people want this player, or this group of people want that player. We want to go offense, and this group wants to go defense. And, you know, I mean, to get it all to the point where they go and hand the commissioner who they want, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of arguing and a lot of – and maybe you have to have a strong person that wins out. You know, is it the owner? Is it the coach? That's a dynamic who, you know, a lot of times, you know, we go back to Tennessee a couple of years ago. Jeff Fisher, guy you talked about, he was adamant that they need a quarterback like Jay Cutler. You know, Fisher watched him play for 4 years, but Bud Adams wanted Vince Young. See what happened there. Bud Adams won out. Fisher was left with a bad team, and so Tennessee is struggling in the recent years. But there's so many dynamics, even with your own within your own building, and for all come together when that pick is made, I find that kind of neat too. You know, because you got to take somebody.
Oh, you make a great point, and that's the great thing about these things. You're not looking at a sport when you watch the draft. You're looking at a business. You're looking at millions and millions of dollars, people in positions that are your research team, your sales team, your development team, the same things that you would find in any business, your marketing team, because you're going out, you got to market that pick for that you eventually make. So many things come in that transcend sports. That is a business, and you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah. Even at the Coach K and Joe show, I was a big proponent of having you on the rant. Joe is like some guy named Theo Marbley or something. I don't even remember, and I'm just thankful that I went out and got Kirk Duxell.
Well, you said you find that in all different types of businesses. I think when springtime comes here with teaching openings and with coaching openings, it seems like in every corporation – every situation, everybody has their guy or their lady that they want in this teaching job. And everybody has an agenda, so you don't always get the coach you want or the teacher you want. And, you know, they argue with it within the school building about it or the business building or whatever, you know, business you're in. There's just all kinds of different dynamics, and it's no different than the NFL draft or, you know, baseball, football, or basketball, whatever. So. It's fun, and it'll go for the next 3 days. They've made sure of that. So,
well, right now you're right. And speaking of teaching, my oldest son Josh finishes his student teaching assignment today, and he'll graduate from IU. And I'm happy. And not only that, but he has an education job already, teaching job at Bar Eve High School, where he'll teach and do some coaching, and had some other opportunities, but Bar Eve was first to the table, and it's a great community and a great school. And speaking of coaching openings, Kirk, before we end the rant, has anything opened up in the high school level on any, in basketball, football, anything open right now that you've heard about?
Well, Southridge, their football job is ongoing with Coach Murphy's resignation a couple of months ago. South Spencer basketball is open for the boys, and that's ongoing right now. So that's about it down here. So,
are you surprised that Southridge has not filled that position up?
No, not really. They're in a teaching predicament with Coach Murphy. You know, did coached varsity football at a really good program while being an assistant principal for 8 years. That's not very easy to do, to keep both those things at a high level, which he did. And they're kind of locked as far as their teaching situation is concerned. They got one guy in house that would do a great job at it. But like anything else, if you're an administrator, you're a board, you got to explore other opportunities, because when Coach Murphy resigned, there were 40 resumes in there. Superintendent's office from all around the state, because it's such a good program, but those people didn't know that they didn't have any teaching openings. But, you know, at the end of a school year, if something would pop up, you've got to explore maybe people from the outside. You just got to see how that works. And that's why I think it's taken so long. And, you know, in the last few weeks of school here, you don't know who might retire or move to a different district or whatever. So I think they're keeping it open. But either way they go, whether in-house or with a coach from another school, I think they'll do all right, because, you know, they've got a good commitment of trying to do things right. So that doesn't surprise me that they haven't come to a conclusion yet on that.
And, of course, we had the Wrights high school football coach, a great program down in Evansville.
Right.
Lewis, he went on and went to Henderson County, and Brian Lewis left Harrison and went to Monrovia as the athletic director. So there's a couple positions open right there.
Well, yeah, that Wrights job, that'll command a lot of, and so will Harrison, for that matter. They'll get a lot of people interested in those two jobs. Wrights, much better job than Harrison. But That'll be interesting to see what happens down there. And, you know, and with Tony Lewis, you know, sometimes, you know, at least up here people kind of shook their head going, you know, God, is that a good move going to Henderson County? And sometimes you don't know what the situation is with rights. I mean, they have some very hefty expectations. You don't know what he ran into, and you probably have a better idea than I do about that down there. But, you know, Henderson County is a really, really good job. I think it's one of the largest schools in the state of Kentucky because their county's so big, and it's a one-school county like a lot of those are down there. But they've had some good coaches and some really good really good teams down there in Henderson County, and they take it serious too, whether it be that basketball job, guys like Curtis Turley and those guys, and Mojo Hollowell coached football there. And that's a nice school, whether it's a lateral move or a step behind, who knows. But if you thought, you know, it was a good job, evidently, it must be, and I think it kind of is.
It's a good job. They've got a nice facility. They've got a lot of pluses. He's a very cerebral coach, very organized, very disciplined, and I think they also gave him a little extra money. So it was a win-win, I think, overall. And you know, he did a great job at Wright's, and you're right. There are great expectations at Wright's, regardless of what's coming through the pipeline. I thought he did a marvelous job this year with his team. No, they didn't win a state championship, but I think they, from where they started, I think they far exceeded the expectations, at least that most people with a normal level of understanding would have, and I think they did a great job. So I think he'll do well at Henderson County, and I think he'll keep that program rolling. Well, it looks like we're coming to the end of the rant. Joe, you can jump in here. Kurt, it was wonderful speaking with you. I'm actually loading up and heading your way to Jasper after the show. And, Joe, you can come in and take us home and finish up the podcast part.
Well, you know, those who didn't get a chance to hear the whole thing, we had a busy show. We had
right.
Chris Emma from Boilermaker Sports on. We had we've had Wade Waltferber on also. We had Mark Deal, great talking to him about IU football plans on being a regular contributor. We've talked to Zach McWright. We've talked to, and I forgot to, you know, I wanted to go ahead and do this. I forgot to congratulate Zach. Zach just married his longtime girlfriend, Britt Missy, actually Britt McWright now, and I wanted to congratulate
Easy,
those two.
Little Easy, Miss Easy, right?
Yeah, Lady Easy, as he calls her.
Yeah,
and,
right.
But it just wanted to. We had a great show, and it was great to have Coach K back because it was tough to do all that stuff. But you know,
yeah.
You handled it okay. You started a little slow. The problem is, I just couldn't get back. I wanted to get back for the IU assistant AD Mark Deal. He has a great pedigree. His dad, I believe, played for a Rose Bowl team. His brother played for the last Rose Bowl team at IU. They're all Hall of Famers in Indiana football. I mean, really, seriously, you did a great job.
Yeah,
well,
Joe, you did a great job.
He plans on coming back, so he'll get a chance to interview him. But next week we've got a couple other people lined up. We wanted to have Mitch Stetter this week. He's said he will come on next week. His problem is he plays on the West Coast and you know, has some late nights, and our show's actually on from 8 till 10 his time. And for a baseball player, that's a little early. But, you know, we'll announce who we'll have on the show next week on Facebook and on our website. So you know, keep a look at that. And for Coach K and for Kurt Dukesville, I'm Joe Milligan. We'll talk to you next week.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.